ready to convene the board meeting?
Yes.
All right. Sorry for the slight delay. It is about 2:03 PM and I call this special board meeting of the Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency Board of Directors to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
John Devaney.
Here.
Jose Trevino. Amanda McKinney.
Present.
Steve Jones.
Here.
Janice DeCio. We have a quorum.
Thank you. We will now go into special executive session, executive session of this special board meeting for the purposes of interviewing and evaluating the qualifications of a candidate for employment pursuant to RCW 42-30.110, section 1G. We will be in executive session for approximately 1 hour, reopening the board meeting at what will now be, because of the delay in starting, 3:05 PM. If there is an additional extension of that time, we will announce that as well. If there's any non-members of the board or others than our candidate, you are now excused as we go into executive session. Of course, Jackie and Maylene, who will be conducting the interview, will remain. Thank you. And because we're in executive session, we can cease recording. The regular open portion of this special board meeting. We are next here from a public presentation from our third candidate for the APCO executive director position. That will include opportunity for the public and members of the board to ask specific questions about this candidate and his presentation, which will be followed afterwards with a Q&A session for the public with all three candidates. The floor is yours, I believe. Jackie, did you have any opening comments on this, on the format before we
no,
turn the
other
floor
than to... we will, you just give us a cue when
sure.
you need us to go to the next slide.
Sure.
Okay.
Everybody, good afternoon. I received an email from the Human Resources and they basically asked me, I believe they ask every candidate, but they asked me to compose a presentation, 15 to 20 minutes PowerPoint presentation, and that's what it is. Basically, it composed of three questions. In the presentation, I will show those questions. I will try to explain or answer those questions. Would you please, the second? The first question was, how would you respond to public complaints and inquiries? I underlined the complaints to answer first the complaints. For the complaints, usually we receive it, we evaluate it. That's the way how this agency, because I work in this agency, we receive it, we evaluate it, we decide on the responses and the urgency of the complaints. The decision basically is based on the situation, if the incident is still ongoing or occurred or happened, finished, availability of the resources. As a matter of fact, this afternoon we received a complaint, it was ongoing, so the availability of the resources or the inspector was available, we send them to that complaint. Definitely they have to investigate, document the complaints and or the incident. Once they come back, we enter that into the database. Once we do that, we resolve the issue as soon as possible and as required. So sometimes we can resolve it within short period of time, sometimes it's longer than that, sometimes we don't know who is the owner, or we just receive a complaint. Sometimes we don't have full information on that. However, I have to make sure that ultimately the goal is to have a compliance within the rules and regulations. So that's the ultimate goal. We do enforcement if needed or as needed. That is the way how we do receive complaints and we respond into those complaints. This is the part for the complaints. The inquiry is part of it. The second slide, please. So, and inquiries. So, local clean air agencies are public agency, and this Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency is a public agency, which are, they are all of them subject to the Public Record Act. As a public agency, most, if not all, information is really public, except as provided by the Act itself. So there is really nothing secret in this agency. Everything is public except my birth date and my my middle name. So that those are the rest of it are public. Or the Act itself says exactly what are those not to be sent out. I strongly believe, and definitely employees of this agency are public servants. I am one of them, so we are here to serve the public. Inquiries must be responded to within the proper time frames and as resources allows. I would like to say something about this bullet here, that this agency is really small enough. We have a public information record officer, but the public information officer is really limited sometimes with their knowledge, as far as if they are asking about certain issues or permits or where they usually go. Everybody gets involved with that in this agency. So not only one person is involved who can really fulfill that request and is done with. No, most of the people in this agency are really involved with. So resources are limited for the agency because it's small in size, but we should strive to serve the public regardless. And we usually through public education and the improvement in our website, communication, and so on and so forth. That's how we do inquiries. Next slide, please. The second question was, how would you work with other government agencies to ensure their decision-coordinated good air quality programs? That's a loaded question. But the local clean air agencies, generally speaking, are an integral part of two major government entities, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Ecology. The local clean air agencies are included and part of the rules and regulations. So those are the two major entities, EPA and ecology. They make rules and regulations, in particular for air, the airport. Those are really targeted for states, the federal rules. They target the states, and the states basically comply with those, and they make their own rules and regulations. Then it comes the local regulations. So since we are part of those regulation, agencies must have a good understanding of the rules and regulations which impacts the local agencies. The local clean air agencies must have good and a continuous communication and input during the rule making. So ecology or EPA, usually EPA codifies the Clean Air Act. So it's really codified, and they say this is the way how it should be done. Then here comes the rules and regulations. Each state makes their own rules and regulations. They start writing those rules and regulations. They don't come from vacuum. So during that process, is the local clean air agencies becomes very important to have some input in those rules and regulations during the rulemaking processes to influence or make sure that at least it's going to be good for the local clean air agencies or for their local localities. That's what I believe. The next bullet here is, most projects in Washington State, in particular, are subject to something which we call State Environmental Policy Act. So those projects, they have to go through either the county or the city or any other local governments. They must have that environmental checklist. The environmental checklist, once the project is, they decide or they say this is the project we are going to do, they submit that to the responsible official or who is in charge for that area. And that environmental checklist is being distributed to the local governments, and which they implement those CBAs. So the local clean air agencies, usually, which we do, have some input, and we comment on those projects, and we say whether they need a certain permits or they are exempt or whatever. Just because of the resources, if there is really no action in our part, we really don't. I don't reply on those because it's of time and resources, because they really don't need any permit. But those they needed a permit from us, we comment on that. Next slide, please. So working with the other government agencies, nowadays wildfires are becoming the norm. Good communication with the government agencies and being part of the discussion and decision making is really important or essential. Understanding the science and the air emissions, the meteorology part of it is required, so we could really minimize the impact for poor air quality. We have been in those for the past years, and we have been in communication usually with the NOAA. We are in communication with the people in the field, with the meteorologists in the fields, and we try to early in the morning and in the evening or in the afternoon see what is going on with those fires to have to be effective and distribute or disseminate this information to the public. And sometimes they happen also when there are schools. Schools, they keep on complaining, they keep on calling us, what can we do, is it, can we exercise, can we? So these are important to ensure the communication with government agencies. And the last bullet here is have a good understanding of the state implementation plan. State implementation plan basically in relation to transportation conformity, that's an important part also. A lot of people miss that. If an area becomes really in non-attainment, it becomes really a huge problem for the Department of Transportation. Projects usually are held, and transportation becomes really a big issue. So to have that, that's an important part of it. Next slide, please. The third question, basically, how would you help individuals and businesses understand and comply with the state, federal, and local air pollution control laws? That is really a very good question. The local clean air agencies are mandated, and it's a mandated with specific rules and regulations. So we don't make rules except the local ones. Most of the rules are mandated by EPA and Department of Ecology. So those are the rules. Specific rules and regulations should be implemented whether we like it or we don't like it. The ultimate goal here is the air quality standards have to be met. We have to meet those air quality standards. EPA says PM2.5 is 35 microgram per cubic meter. I don't have a decision to make it 34 or 30 or 60 or 70. Those are the rules. Programs are implemented to meet. So that's where the local clean air agencies, they implement certain programs to meet those air quality standards. Individuals and businesses' activities in relation to the air emissions are subject to those programs. So therefore, I have to make this slide is to go to make sure that I can really relate or help the individual and the businesses understand them to comply with those rules. So those rules is we are mandated with them. Then next slide, please. So that's where compliance and helping the individuals or businesses understand these rules. Compliance and helping comes in different forms. It's not, when I say compliance, that means I'm at this stage, I'm helping those individuals and businesses to really comply with those rules and regulations. First, it's through transparency and good communication with individuals and businesses must be a priority for this agency. So I have to communicate those rules and regulations and why am I asking them to do this. And as we say that, I'm from the government, I'm here to help you. Really? So that's not true. For most of the people, they think, no, that's not true, but it is true. Personally speaking, I look at the individuals and businesses, they are like a client. You are helping them to meet those rules and regulations. That's the way how I look at it. Then if they don't want to deal with that, then eventually we can talk about the enforcement, but that's my job to disseminate those information through explanation of the rules and the purposes of those regulations and ultimately its goals. Compliance with air regulations benefits the individuals and the businesses and the community as a whole by really achieving those air quality standards. Because if the community or the area is not meeting air quality standards, EPA has some leverage. Usually they designate that as a non-attainment. If the area becomes in a non-attainment area, you have a specific period of time. Usually EPA gives you 5 years to come out of it, and you have to show how you are going to come out of it. Where is the reduction in air emissions programs and so on and so forth. And the last I remember, I did a little calculation, it's going to cost more than $30-40 million. That's easy. And more than that to come out of it. If not, eventually they take over. Enforcement is a part of compliance. That is the way how you do that. At times you reach certain time that you really need to use the enforcement as part of the compliance if you don't see a lot of responses. Good proactive communication via correspondence, emails, in-persons, meeting, technical assistance. So I like to use the technical assistance part of it for businesses and explain that, what they need to do, what kind of permits, and so on and so forth. That's what I believe how I can help individuals and businesses understand. And my experience really tells me that a lot of people that when you start talking to them the first time, they say, wow, I didn't know that. I really didn't know that. So it is true. You have to believe that everybody tells you the truth. And you have to take people and businesses at their face value. We have discovered certain businesses, they have been doing businesses in our area for a while without permits. And when we discovered them, they went through permitting. Some individuals, they basically said, I'm sorry, I never heard of your agency. Well, thank you very much, now you're here. So let's talk about it. So that's the way how I believe I can help individuals and businesses understand and comply with those rules and regulations. Those are basically the three questions. I'm glad they didn't, the human resources didn't ask me more than three, otherwise I'll be keep on talking. So that should conclude my presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Tahat. We'll have questions both from the board and the public. For members of the public who want to ask a question, I'm going to ask that you move towards the microphone and stand near it so that we can capture your audio. Also, please do speak loudly because one of our board members is participating by teleconference on the speakerphone, and so we want to make sure that everyone hears your questions. While you may be thinking about questions you may want to ask, I know I have a couple, so maybe I will take chairman's privilege and lead off. Dr. Tahat, you emphasized the need to do education and outreach on regulatory requirements before moving directly to enforcement. I generally favor that approach, but it also raises the question of when are people acting in good faith, and how do you determine when education and assistance towards compliance needs to move towards a more forceful regulatory response.
That,
can you describe where you see those lines falling?
That's really a very good question. And basically, the way how my experience tells me that the first time even you talk to certain businesses or certain individuals, you really can't see that. You really can't feel that. They really have no knowledge about it. They really didn't know anything about it. And basically, they tell you straightforward, what exactly do you want me to do? I will be more than happy to do that. But certain people say, who are you? You have no right to be here. And you can see that part in that respect. You can make that decision at that point in time. And certain people, they really understand through sending them in writing. This is the way how the rules are regulations, and this is what you need to do. And this is why I'm asking you that. Because some certain people, they are really, you have to assume and respect each and every person or businesses, that they are really telling you the truth. I can't, as a public servant, I can't assume anybody's telling me a lie. Everybody's telling me the truth until they prove it otherwise. So if they need further explanation or the rules and regulations, I have to write it down to them and send it to them and say, this is, if I find that cooperation and we are going through the process, that's great. If not, then I'll say, this is my second step. I will go through an enforcement and I would send a notice of penalty, and if me, and then followed by a notice of penalty. I'll follow the procedure. I don't have a problem with that. I prefer definitely the education first, outreach first, and if it's ultimately, my goal is to have a compliance. That's the ultimate goal. Whether it's, I'm not interested in penalizing somebody monetarily speaking to reach that compliance goal. If I can reach that compliance goal before even shortcut, that is great. But I wouldn't be hesitant to use the enforcement part when I need it.
Thank you. A second question I had for you is, you did a great job, I think, in your second response in describing how coordination among agencies is built into the organizational relationships, or you know, EPA, ecology, and local clean air agencies. But there's some partners that should be involved in the process where that's not as formalized. You know, we have a tribal nation within the borders of the county, or partially, that our direct relationship with them is not as formal. How would you approach partnerships with stakeholders who are not, including governmental stakeholders, who are not as overtly part of the process with specific coordination requirements and comment periods?
The way how I look at it, those areas are completely independent nations, and they have their rules and regulations, and they have their sovereignty. I respect that. They are affected by the air emissions from my area, and they are affected, we are affected from their air emissions from their areas. I would like to keep good communications, and I'm more than happy to keep good communications with anybody who would like to have that communications. EPA currently is in charge of that area. I do have a good relationship with EPA. As a matter of fact, I believe this month we have a meeting with EPA and Department of Ecology, and they are part of it. And I would like them to, and this agency, if we all work towards a better air for their airshed or our airshed, and unfortunately I cannot make a divider between those, between their area and my area, so we are affected. However, I cannot force myself into their jurisdiction, but I respect that through the proper channels. And, you know, if they have, truly speaking, they call it the FAR rules, and if they have a better program than ours, I would like to copy it. I do believe in plagiarism for goodness. If it is for the good of the community, I do believe in it. So if they have a good program that I could implement it in my area, why not? If I have a better program in my area, then if they want to take it, please. I have no problem with that. So engineers, we believe that I don't have to invent the wheel. The wheel has been invented a long time ago. So I don't have to make a new one, unless it's square, that's the difference.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions from other members of the board?
No.
Commissioner McKinney, do you have any questions? Not hearing any.
I do, I apologize. A little delay on my end for the mute. My question, Dr. Fahad, and again, I apologize for not being present, but as you know, our vacations were on different schedules, and I made a commitment that it was important for me to take part in this interview, so I apologize for not being there in person. My question is specifically to, I would love to have you expand for those present in the difference in where you see the line between the scientific aspect of the role of the agency, and of course that's your area of expertise, but as a director, to which you touched on in the interview process, is that you are there to guide and lead, being in leadership role for the staff and interfacing with the public. So how do you see your strengths and guiding you with the scientific aspect, segueing over into the more director role, which is a more high-arching budget, public-facing role that we have, you know, conceived to see in this public agency?
Thank you, Commissioner. Based on my background, that's for sure, that my love is for science. I love science, and I do believe in science. That is very true. Most of the decision or even critical thinking are scientifically also proven. That's the best way to approach it. I do understand I have, even in my bachelor's degree, we have to basically look at every project with the benefit and the cost ratio. If it is less than one, it's basically a failure project, so you don't do it. If it is greater than one, you push through with that. I would like to look at it as a whole. I would like to look at the equation or the staff and the community as a whole. And if I can include the scientific background of it, which I will, and have that balanced to come up with a good decision, and which I hope I will always come up with a decision that is going to be helpful to the community as a whole. That's how I would like to integrate my scientific background with the community and with the role as a director. I understand your question, and I still love science the way how I would like to basically make that decision in a balanced way for the benefit of the community.
Thank you very much for that, Dr. Tahat.
Yeah, I think part of my study, I studied a little bit politics, but I'm not so sure whether I can credit myself for that, but it's okay. So hopefully I'll balance that equation, Commissioner.
Did you have any further questions, Commissioner?
Thank you,
Chair. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair.
Again, if members of the public want to ask questions, I can't always see people behind me if they're looking like they're moving towards the microphone. If you want to ask a question, please do move in that direction so that I know that you wish to. Jackie and Mei Ling, do you have any questions that you think you'd like to ask our candidate to help elicit information?
No.
Okay. Any other questions from members of the board?
Not for me.
No. I would just like to thank Dr. Bahat again for his presentation and for being available to do this process on a fairly short turnaround after your return from extended travel. Hopefully you still enjoyed your vacation without thinking about preparation for this too much.
Thank you. I did enjoy, and I saw my family. It was a nice one and emotional, but I really appreciate you guys accommodating that too. Thank you.
Very good. We have all three candidates scheduled for a joint question and answer panel beginning in just short of 10 minutes. So I will send us into a brief recess so that we can get things set up. And we'll start at the designated time when the other candidates can join us. So we'll stand in recess until 3:45 p.m. Thank you. We're returned from recess. It's 3:45 p.m. We're now moving into the board and public question and answer session with our three finalists.
You want to unmute?
I did. Okay. Commissioner McKinney, you're on here?
Yes, ma'am. I can hear everyone loud and clear. Thank you.
Great. Perfect. Thanks for the audio check there. Before we go into more general board and public questions, not everyone has been at each step of this process, including our Lower Valley meeting. So I'd like to start by asking each of our three candidates in turn to give a short introduction of themselves and their backgrounds, including their interest in the position. It does not have to be an extended set of remarks, but just a general summary of your background and qualifications and interest in the position. Why don't we begin with Mr. Thornsberry?
I'm Mark Thornsberry. My quick background is after graduating with a degree in business, I started a technology consulting firm, owned and managed that for about 8 years. Transitioned from that to freight forwarding and customs house brokerage. For those of you who do not know what that is, you can sort of imagine it as travel agent for your cargo. If you've got oranges that need to go from Singapore to Arizona, they would handle all of the paperwork and arranging for transportation from the source to the destination. And I spent about 10 years there. And then I went into public administration and did that for 13 years, leading another public agency. And then have recently taken some time off to deal with some health issues that my folks had. When this position came open, it seemed to be a good fit for my public administration background. Again, like I said, I've spent the last 13 years almost doing that. And my feeling was I had something useful to contribute. And so that's what prompted my interest. Thank you.
Mr. Yost?
So I hold a master's degree in public administration from University of Southern California, and I've spent the last 20 years of my life in the government enterprise in some manner, specifically with the Department of Defense, both with the U.S. Army, the Washington Army National Guard, in various capacities. Currently, I'm a strategic and long-range planner with the Department of the Army here at the Yakima Training Center. I've served as an enlisted member of the Washington Army National Guard for 20 years, as well as a member of the civilian service staff with the Washington Army National Guard, doing budgeting for overseas training and programs, specifically overseas exercises with multilateral partners, that being Kingdom of Thailand, the country of Malaysia, and other members, specifically more frequently in the Indo-PACOM region. Additionally, I moonlight as a command sergeant major in the field artillery, where I am in charge of the administrative processes for 500 personnel of the Washington Army National Guard. Everything from dealing with behavioral health requirements for soldiers, medical processes, pay, incentives pay and standard pay, travel, training, promotions, I mean, anything that would come with their overall career for the enlisted force of that organization. As far as my interest in the position, I very much long to strive for a career either as a county administrator or a city manager in the greater Yakima area. I see this as a natural course towards one of those two goals. I grew up in Yakima. I've lived here since 1988. This is my hometown, and I have a deep-rooted It's almost a family enterprise to serve. My father was a public servant his entire life, both as a U.S. Army officer and a teacher in the Yakima Valley. And it's just what my family does is serve our community. So appreciate your time.
Dr. Tahat.
My name is Hassan Tahat. My background, my bachelor, master's, and PhD is in engineering. I have worked for this agency for the past probably 25 years, and I have moved in several positions. I started as an engineer. Right now I am the compliance, engineering, monitoring, planning, division, supervisor, so that's a very mouthful. My interest really is I would like to, I love this community. I could see my contribution to this community. I would like to continue contributing to this community and bring this agency to a level where that is, I should be very careful with my words, that is, I really take this agency against any other local clean air agencies, but there are certain areas we can improve, and I would like to take it to that level. So I would like to continue that. I would like to see eventually we are on that aspect. And rules and regulation keeps on changing very frequently, and the rumors, whether it's true or not, PM2.5 are gonna be lowered to 32. And if that's the case, then we have a lot of work to do. So I would like to continue that work. I would like to make sure that we will be always in non-attainment to benefit this community. And I have been in this community for the past 28 years, and it is my community. That's my interest.
Great. Thank you, all three of you. Now it's an opportunity for members of the board and members of the public in particular to ask questions of these candidates. If any member of the public wants to ask a question, would you please move in the direction of the microphone so I can see that you wish to, and you'll be recognized in turn to ask questions. Let's see, we have this one public question. If you would move as close as you can to the standing microphone there.
I have a number of questions, so if anybody else wants to ask questions, I will go to the end of the line.
Well, at least why don't you start with your first one, and if someone else stands up, then we'll ask you to give them a turn in and work in among your questions. If you could also please identify if your question is directed at a particular candidate or all three candidates who respond in turn. And if I didn't mention, if you would also identify yourself for the candidates and for the audio recording.
I will do that.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Jean Mendoza. I'm the executive director for the Friends of Toppenish Creek, an environmental group in the Lower Yakima Valley with a special interest in air quality. And thank you all for being here. I know it's the second time for a couple of you. Appreciate the effort. I'll start with a question for you, Mr. Yost.
Okay.
Can you name the criteria air pollutants?
Say again.
Would you name the criteria air pollutants?
Criteria air pollutants?
Criteria air pollutants.
Are you talking about like PM2.5, ma'am?
That's one of them.
Okay, and then that's the key one that comes out to my mind, ma'am. So, but I guarantee with a little bit more fastidious research, I can find it out fast.
I have a feeling a lot of people in this room could not do that, so I brought a handout to help people.
Okay.
Maybe just take one and pass it around. So, do you know what a precursor air pollutant is?
A precursor air pollutant?
Yes.
Oh, you're fine. I do not know specifically, but I could probably get to it if I just go off of the actual words themselves. It's probably something that is not necessarily down to that molecular level that is going to actually be harmful to our ingestion of it through, you know, nasal passage or something else. That way it's a pollutant that enters into the Earth's atmosphere and then is further whittled down into a more harmful chemical. More or less.
More or less, correct. So on your handout there, I listed the six criteria air pollutants.
Yes, ma'am.
And then I listed some criteria air pollutants
mm-hmm.
for that impact us here in the Yakima Valley.
Yes, ma'am.
So you'll see that PM2.5, the precursors.
PM10, I couldn't remember that one. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So I'm assuming you have read the Yakima Air Winter Nitrate Study.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have it recorded to memory, but I have read it. Yes, ma'am.
So if you wouldn't mind, just in a couple of sentences, what is your big takeaway from that study?
My big takeaway from that study was that there was an ammonia sulfate issue that is very prevalent in the Yakima Valley. A lot of the belief structure inside of the Yawns study was specifically that it has to do with a very historical soil saturation based upon farming and agricultural business going on in the area. And that when we enter into the winter months, just because of the different molecular and chemical effects going on at the time, we have this baseline in Yakima that is very, very close to very harmful levels of pollutant in our air just naturally. So anything that's going to increase that baseline is going to just put us into a very critical mass situation for our air pollution as a whole, as a valley. And so that's one of the reasons why the initiative with the grant funding through the organization to try to get wood burning stoves and everything else out of homes. And then a lot of the other things, like when I was a kid, we had smudge pots all over the place and every single apple orchard and everywhere else, and a lot of those got outlawed, right? And so everything that we can do to decrease that pollutant that we're going to be putting into the air gives us an advantage to be able to keep us out of that critical area.
You did a great job. You don't have to.
Okay, sorry. Thank you.
So you've lived in the valley all your life. So you were here with
all but four. I was born in Kentucky.
Oh, congratulations.
I'm an Army brat.
But you're familiar of what it was like here when the smudge pots were going.
Yes, ma'am.
And what it took to convert from smudge pots to a cleaner way of farming.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Do you have thoughts on what the Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency can do to reduce PM2.5 and also to reduce some of the precursor air pollutants?
Me specifically or all of
yes,
us?
Yes, as leader, we would look to you as
yeah,
a leader.
But me specifically or all three candidates?
I'll ask them separately.
Okay, that's fair. I'm just making sure, ma'am. Mm-hmm. I mean, as presented by some of the researchers here at the Yakima Clean Air Agency, as well as, you know, you see throughout other best practices in other agencies, other states, other communities, other nations even, there's myriad of different ways that we can probably get after how we solve that solution. You know, one of the papers that you guys penned here yourself about the best practices for dairy operations in the valley and how do we go after that solution as far as giving best practice information to already established businesses as a value-added partner to get them to not necessarily stop what they're doing, but make it in a more compliant manner that's going to increase our quality of life overall as the constituent, as the end user of the air that they're polluting, is I think the best way forward for right now. Because as the study that you referenced specifically talks about, it's not a matter of this is something that we need to curtail in the future. It's already a problem. So how do we take a historical issue that we have and find better practices to downgrade and negate maybe that issue that we have historically? And then how do we also ensure that when we move forward as an organization with our business partners and the overall community as a whole and implement other practices, procedures, businesses, or what have you, that we go after being a part of the planning team for those organizations to ensure that best practices research has been conducted, they're implementing everything as much as they can to the full capability at the time with the best science involved to be able to reduce air pollutants in the future.
So I hear you talking about best practices, and am I correct in paraphrasing that
yep.
you believe the Clean Air Agency should be monitoring best practices and helping people to to implement more best practices?
Yes, ma'am. So, you know, case in point, whenever you want to learn how to do something better, you know, a simple analogy for you. I'm an artilleryman. And we go down to the National Training Center in California every so often to practice war. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that we do before we go down there is we'll observe rotations before us to see how they do things right and how they do things wrong. And we try to implement that back in our own organization, because no organization does everything perfect, and you need to always be in a continuous learning environment as an organization, so that way you can continuously improve. Well, same thing should be held true for every government agency in office, is that we observe the best practices in other counties or even other states. How are they getting after some of the same problems that we're seeing? You know, maybe we go into the Midwest where they also have a large fruit tree agribusiness as well, and see how they're doing some of the things that we're not doing better, or is it different, and how so? So, and then bring it back, and if it works, so be it. But we have to be willing to go after that way and bring things home to implement here to improve our own process.
As director of the Clean Air Agency, let me give you a little background here.
Yes, ma'am.
You don't have to believe me, but this is my perspective.
Yes, ma'am. That's fair.
So, as a little old lady who heads an environmental group,
uh-huh.
I have frequently felt shut out of the discussions about air science in this agency. You don't have to believe that, but that's the way I see mm-hmm. things. I believe that my group brings some important information to the Clean Air Agency. How would you go about accommodating our submissions of research and our opinions regarding best ways to improve air quality?
I mean, as the director, how the director accommodates?
How would you as director?
Yeah, so as a director, the way that you accommodate the submissions of, you know, community research, independent research, and everything else, it's you would turn it over to the professionals of the organization as added data points for them to consider. But at the end of the day, I see the mission set of the executive director different than just a matter of doing the hard science of the Clean Air Agency. That is very important, but that's why you have the team for compliance that you do, because at the end of the day, the executive director's position is really a much more administrative heavy position. So I would do my due diligence as an executive director to receive the information, make sure it's categorized and processed accordingly, and then it is forwarded to the compliance team and the engineers for further consideration with whatever research they are conducting. But I don't think it's the place of the executive director to require them to consider it more than just another data point. It's going to be inside of their scope of research. It's going to be their decision making of whether or not it really applies to the science as far as what they are seeing from their different models and from their different takeaways as they test hypotheses.
Jean, if I could interject just a minute, not to cut you off, just in case any other members of the public have questions, and also a time check. The Q&A is scheduled for 45 minutes, and you've used a third of it on one candidate
yeah.
so far. Just because the clock's behind you, I wanted to keep you aware of the time so I don't cut you off prematurely.
Sure.
Thanks. Please continue, unless someone else is standing up with a question.
Lucky me. Final question.
Okay.
How do you see the role of executive director, your role of educating, informing, and guiding the staff? And what would you be the requirements of your staff when they go out to do an investigation? How closely would you expect your staff to comply with the Clean Air Agency code for investigations?
So I see that as two different questions. So I'll answer it in two parts if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Part one, as far as educating and basically doing a professional development piece with the staff. So the essential job of the executive director for me is to ensure that the administrative processes of the organization are being conducted capably, that being personnel accountability, pay, the overall accountability to the public for public records requests and release, distribution to the county board, and distribution of other information to other governments inside of Yakima County. So that's really the hallmark for me of the executive director, making sure the organization as a whole runs. As far as the professional development piece for the staff, it would be specifically in that vein. How do we do a better job of our administration of the organization and ensuring that we're meeting our essential function as an agency? To include ensuring that we work with the individual supervisors of each specific sector inside of the agency, that their staff also have some type of continuing education process to where they're making sure that they're reaching outside to learn and develop themselves inside of their niched understandings of engineering and science, so that way we're not reducing our, as the good doctor was mentioning, like the regulatory environment of the of Washington State and Yakima Valley keeps on changing and changing and changing. So unless we're continuously learning, we're not going to be on top of things. As far as the investigative code and when they go out to do investigations, if we have an investigative code or if we have a policy or a procedure that we pen and go through the staffing process to get the board to agree to it and make it actual policy for the organization, I expect 100% compliance. And if we are not compliant with it, then there's always that situation where we have a way of doing business, and then the way of doing business is not necessarily the best way of doing business, so then we revisit the policy and change the policy. But if there is a policy in place, we should adhere to it. And if not, then we need to go back to the board and request relief from that policy and a change. And that would be where the staff comes to me and asks me to go back to the board and present that change.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Thornsberry.
Yes.
I apologize.
No problem.
Thank you. I gather you are not from Washington State.
No, but the public agency I served was in Washington State.
So you're familiar with the state of Washington in many respects?
Yes, certainly if you're talking about things like public works contracting and professional services, and Public Records Act and open public meetings, all of those things, yes.
Thank you. Are you familiar with the recently passed Climate Commitment Act and the recently passed HEAL Act?
Only vaguely. I've heard of them, but like I say, I have taken a break recently to deal with some health issues with my parents, so I've not been keeping track of what's been going through the legislature in the last 2 years. So I can't speak to either of those specifically. I know there's been a lot of discussion in Washington over and a lot of argument back and forth, depending on who you're talking to, with respect to climate change and how to address that issue long term. I've only sort of tangentially kept up with it, mostly because it just seems to be a bit of a mishigosh, but I'm sure something will end up coming out of it. The role for
the number you have dialed has not been recognized. Please try again.
The role for clean air agencies, from what little I know, is a bit fuzzy. There is discussion in the statutory language with respect to authorities and mission for clean air agencies that discusses that specifically, so it's within the overarching purview of what the legislature had in mind when it adopted the act, or at least amended it.
Mm-hmm.
But how that ties in with the other, I'm not sure.
If you could pause in that question. We lost Commissioner McKinney. We're just diving back in. We did this once before, unfortunately. I apologize. We'll extend the time if necessary.
We're sorry, your call did not go through. Will you please try your call
you.
Again?
Mm-hmm.
We're sorry, your call did not go through. Conference ID 978 is not valid. Please enter your conference ID and press the pound key. There is one party in the conference. This call is being recorded.
Commissioner McKinney?
Hi, Jackie, I'm here.
All right, we've got you. Thank you.
So Mr. Thornsberry, I'm introducing a difficult subject here, but this is important to Friends of Toppenish Creek.
Sure.
And to talk a little bit about the Climate Commitment Act and the HEAL Act, both of those pieces of legislation require community engagement from public agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those pieces of legislation codify environmental justice. Are you familiar with the term environmental justice?
I would say yes, but I've also heard a couple of different definitions of it from different people. So I suppose I would say, I think broadly speaking, yes, but as to your particular flavor of that, I don't know if I'm familiar with which side of that you end up being on.
Here's the problem. In Yakima County, there's a smorgasbord of flavors.
Okay.
So,
great.
Dr. Jones here and I probably could have a really big battle over what is environmental justice.
Okay. Mm.
So, as you can see from his statement, and this is from several years ago, he believes that environmental justice identifies a special class of people that requires special treatment above and beyond the general public. And I don't think he's the only person in Yakima County who sees that things that way. I, on the other hand, believe that there's lots of discrimination against poor people and people of color in Yakima County. So I'd like to give you a little time here to elaborate on how you would interact between two groups of people who see things so differently.
Well, I tend to, I'll just speak sort of broadly, because before I spoke on a subject like this, I would want to spend some time at least waist deep in it, if not neck deep. But I'll speak broadly that I tend to be a moderate and a pragmatist, have been my whole life. It's just sort of my personality. So when I look at issues where there's conflict, and I've gone through a number of them in my lifetime, I usually try to find if there's, and there isn't always one, but lots of times there is, some common ground, a thread, an objective, an outcome, something that can be used as a basis for building a solution of some kind. Now, when I say solution, most people immediately think, so I'm going to get everything I want. But that's not what I mean. My personal opinion, and I think it's been borne out in my experience, is that if you can walk away from the table with everybody getting something, even if no one gets everything, that's probably about as good a deal as you can get. My grandfather always used to say, I'd rather have 50% of something over 100% of nothing. And I sort of carried that with me. So if we're looking at environmental, specifically with respect to environmental justice, I think there are some details. I tend to also add to this that I tend to be a bit of a data geek. So I usually try to base assessments and decision making on some factual information that supports that. It's been my experience that as a general rule of thumb, it is much easier to come to a conclusion if people aren't arguing about opinions. As one person used to say, opinions are a lot like your backside. Everybody has one, but everybody holds different opinions. As you say, there's a smorgasbord of flavors, and so it's impossible, of course, to adopt all of those. So what you have to do is find some reason for making a decision, and I think that's where the data piece comes into it. So looking at how that could be balanced, groups that are appropriately designated that way. And I will tell you that there are, and I don't care whether you're talking about air quality or you're talking about something else, it covers a whole range of areas. Transportation is one that's been a notable one, where there are groups that have been excessively I'll say, impacted by decisions, and sometimes repeatedly. And like I say, I'll point to transportation as one, just because I think it's pretty common that most people know it. You know, where you run the freeway through the least desirable part of town. Why? Because it's easier, you know, you're probably going to have less people who are going to fight you. They don't have the economic wherewithal to do that. Those kinds of things. So I do think there is, I think there is a role for environmental justice in looking at how issues are addressed. The extent of that and how to balance that against other elements, you know, I won't tell you how that's going to shake out in advance, because that's a figure it out as you go along sort of situation. But that's where that's how I would come at it. And that's certainly how I would look at trying to bring folks with different views together. So try to find a nexus where you can make some progress.
So you said you're kind of a data geek.
A little bit.
Okay.
I'll admit to it.
Okay. So in trying to weigh things and find common ground, where do you see the science? What role do you see for the science in finding common ground and finding the truth in a situation?
Well, it's hard to argue with facts. So going back to the whole issue with opinion and facts, the reason why I tend to like them is it helps make things clear. And I'll be the first one, by the way, to tell you that there have been many occasions when I started out with a hypothesis that by the time I drilled down into the details, I ended up coming to a different conclusion than the one I anticipated when I started. An old professor of mine used to say, come up with your hypothesis, find your facts, and reach your conclusion, not the other way around. And he drilled that into me enough that I remember it some, you know, 30 or some odd years later. So I always look at that because it's informative, I think, for everybody. For those who are truly looking objectively at how you address an issue, but I think sometimes it's also an eye-opener for people who quite legitimately believe that it looks like X, even if it may look like Y. And again, I'll be the first one to admit that there are times I've looked at an issue and thought it looked an awful lot like an X to me until I got into it and discovered it was a Y. That's not going to solve a person who is absolutely intent, you know, that the world is flat. It won't matter how many shots you take from space. It won't change their mind. But for most people operate on, I think, tends to be a genuine belief, sometimes mistaken. And data helps shift that discussion to things that are productive instead of disagreements that actually aren't accurate.
You have a question? No.
She's just stretching.
If you are chosen to be executive director, would you make an informal pledge to listen to everybody?
No, I wouldn't make an informal pledge. I'd make a formal one. I mean, that's just part of the process. So I let me just preface that a little bit by saying I don't come to the position as a subject matter expert. I hire staff to provide those facilities. So I'm a public administrator, and that's what I do. And that's a part of what being a public administrator is in Washington State. Did it, like, say, for the last 13 years. So for me, it's part and parcel of the whole issue. Everybody deserves a legitimate, reasoned response. And that's what I did, again, for the last 13 years. I would say probably 95% of the time, I ended up having a useful and productive relationship with people who, you know, came into the door with a head of steam. And started off early. When I took that position, I was supposed to start on a Monday. There was a meeting taking place the Friday before. Asked me to come up early in order to attend it so I didn't miss some critical stuff. Walked in, and 5 minutes after I walked in, I wasn't even on the job. I had a guy come in and demand to know what we were spending his tax money on, because it sure seemed like a waste of time to him. And so that was my introduction to public service. And, you know, I sat down with him. We had a very nice conversation. He listened to what I had to say. I explained a number of things, corrected a few misunderstandings that he had, rumors that he had been told, and we had a good engagement. And I did that multiple times with plenty of people. Again, there were a few that just, you know, would not be happy no matter what. But most of the time, they wanted to know their concerns had been listened to and had been addressed. And if they did that, they were satisfied.
Thank you.
Were there any other questions? Otherwise, I'll just allow them to continue on. I do have one question that was emailed in, so I'll reserve a couple minutes at the very end just to ask that emailed question from the public.
Dr. Dehop?
Yes, ma'am.
Long day. you told us about your academic preparation. Is there anybody else in the Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency who has a degree beyond a bachelor's degree?
To my knowledge, not.
Okay.
To my knowledge.
Would it be fair to say that you are the science officer for the Clean Air Agency?
I would say so.
So would I. In November of last year, you submitted a research article to the American Journal of Environmental Protection, is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that article was accepted last December, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I brought copies for people here, in case anybody wants to take a look. Did you talk to the board of directors about the publication of the article?
No.
And in a few sentences, would you describe the content of that article?
Basically, the article, it's not an article, it's basically based on the title of the American Journal of Environmental Protection is Regional Air Emission Reduction from Dairy Operation via Best Management Practices. So that is, I am one of the authors, and I have one, two, three, four authors, so five authors. Generally speaking, if you look at it, to summarize it, or the abstract of this paper, is the dairy policy which we have implemented. And the first one was a pilot study, and the second phase of it was implemented for most of the dairies. I do believe that would have or have benefited the air emission reductions for those eight pollutants. So that's the summary of it. And that's what our finding was, and I submitted it and it was accepted.
So it was a summary of the air quality management policy for dairies?
Yes. Yes.
Would you take a look at figure four?
Yeah.
Okay. And for the bottom part of figure four, it says percentage effectiveness of implemented BMPs at reducing individual pollutants based on all participating dairy operations.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain to everybody what that means?
And the simplest way of explaining this graph, if you look at this graph, the first time you look at it, you would believe that if you implement those best management practices, the effectiveness, let's say, for ammonia reduction would be about 80%. That's really not what it really says. So you need to be very careful in reading exactly what this figure is. What this figure is saying that those best management practices which we have implemented through those policy, that if you take, for instance, ammonia at 100% air emission, there was that much reduction. So, unfortunately, that was the baseline for us to continue through those policy. But unfortunately, we stopped that policy because I got to be honest and frank with the public and with everybody. The daily policy have cost this agency almost $400,000 to $500,000. That is, the initial thought of the whole policy was the board of directors looked at the agency or the staff and says, we have complaints about dairy operation. Is there anything you guys can do? So I'm trying to connect your questions or the first question to the second, and I anticipate the third, to be honest with you. I'm trying to, if I'm a scientist, the question was, that was the question, can we do something about it? As an agency, you look at the rules and regulations. If the rules and regulations are there and you can implement those, then you implement those rules and regulations. But for the dairy in particular, or certain industries, that if there is no rules and regulations from the federal or state, then you come up with a policy. You say, we can come up with a policy and the best management practices. When we started this policy, truly speaking, that I know nothing about cows more than probably the milk. And I was always confused about even the chocolate milk. So, but the truth of the matter is that I have to look at the research. I have to clarify that chocolate milk, because I tell my children they make the water so murky, they drink it, then they have the chocolate milk. So I have to clarify that. So I looked at the data. I looked at everything, and the literature was telling me in those best management practices, if you take care of the feeds, for instance, that you would have certain reduction in this specific air emissions. If you take care of this is, so it was at that point in time, this was plus minus. So if you do a certain management practices, you can increase and decrease the air emissions. As an engineer, I looked at it, it doesn't make any, doesn't help me a lot. I had to come up with a numbering system and come up with an averaging system. That's how we came up. Some people, they call the score sheet, some people, whatever you want to call it, that's the way how I have to treat each and every dairy or inspection in the same manner. So going back to this figure, that's where these numbers came. If we are implementing those policies, there was a reduction in air emissions in relation to each air pollutant for those eight of them. And this paper went through, I have to make that very clear, this went through a journal. So it went through a peer review. So if there's something wrong with it, the peer review should have caught it. So that's what the figure four means to me.
So, Dr. Jahat, you said you anticipated my third question, and I have a feeling you did.
I would keep it to myself, but I am more than
willing. I can ask it.
Yes, please.
Okay, so this 76% for methane, mm-hmm. that does not mean that this policy reduced methane emissions by 76%.
No. That's true.
Thank you.
If you wrap up in just another minute or two, I'll have that one emailed question from another member of the public, and then we'll move into the public comment period. But I want to give you a minute or so to ask that last question, and then give whoever you ask it a chance to answer.
Okay. So if you look at the last paragraph of this article.
Mm-hmm.
Paragraph says, the next to last sentence says, the results from the first year of full implementation will be used as the baseline for evaluating future progress in the reduction of emissions in the county. Can you tell me when that will happen?
Unfortunately, that's really the first my hope was to continue the policy and then go through the second year, third year, fourth year of inspection and run it through the same procedure, the same grading system for the inspections, and eventually come back and say, okay, this is the result, this is the improvement, this is, but unfortunately at this point in time, I don't have the policy, I don't have continuation for this.
So here's my problem. You submitted this for publication last November,
yeah,
and it was published last December.
Yes.
So in my mind, this statement should be current as of last December.
When I wrote this paper, I wrote it probably right after the first or the second year of implementing the policy. Did I take a look at each and every word of it? Maybe not. But at this point in time, I looked at it as a conclusion or implication for the policy makers that I was hoping, the hope, even if it eventually the policy, this agency implements it again, this will be still a valid statement. Then I could look at back at those reduction and see, compare it on the same procedure and then come up with a different conclusion or a better conclusion. I don't know. If you are trying to say that when that is gonna happen, at this point in time, my answer is the policy is not there and we are not doing any inspection unless there would be a new rules or regulations from the federal or the state that is specific to dairy operation. If that happens, then we'll bring that policy back and we will see, implement those rules and regulations. At that point in time, I will take a look at this paper, I'll scrutinize it more, and if there is something to be published, I will publish. If there is nothing to be published, I can't publish. I can, basically facts are facts, I can make facts.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for giving me so much time.
Thank you. Thank you for being so organized and having your questions written out in advance. You worked through those pretty efficiently. The question that was submitted online through our website is from a Tommy Lopez, who wants to ask all three candidates the question, which is probably a good one for each to answer and turn to end on. What is the job description, in your opinion, of the executive director? It says job description, I'm assuming they mean role or function. Maybe we'll take these in reverse order, beginning with Dr. Tahat.
Well, I think the job description is already in the advertisement, so that's the easiest answer. You can read the advertisement and it says the executive director job announcement, but the simplest way of looking at it, really, the executive director should be able to look at the community or the air resources and how to make sure that the air is healthy as possible. There is, I always look at, there is really nothing impossible, everything is possible, but everything has a cost. How much are we willing to pay for certain services or certain whatever it is. So you could really improve the air quality to a different level if you spend so much money on that particular issue. Can we afford it as a community as a whole? The answer may be no, or maybe the answer is yes. It depends. I look at it is to keep the air quality standards, or keep the community, the air quality standards are below the air quality standards or in a better level and keep on improving on that year over year. So it's not an easy job because population growth is happening, and with each population growth there are also air emission increases. His job is to make sure that which areas, which industry to target where you can have your maximum impact with the least cost reduction in air emissions. I believe that 100%, and the resources are limited in our agency. There is, that's for a fact. Our budget is limited, no matter how you stretch it. Our resources, staff members, we can't make this agency 50 or 100 people. I wish we can. If you have that resources, you can do more, but you have to do what you have to do with what you have. And that's what I believe. Staff in this agency are capable. I believe there are people are outside also, they are capable. We can hire people to replace whoever retires or leaves this agency. But I believe that is the job of the executive director to keep balance all those aspects. That's what I believe within the resources we have.
Thank you. Mr. Yost.
So I believe the position of executive director is a resource allocator, a risk manager, a talent manager, and a salesperson. As the good doctor said, you have a finite amount of resources that you actually can allocate to the problem, which is how do we increase the air quality of the overall Yakima Valley for the end user, the constituent? Well, no matter what, at the end of the day, we're only going to be able to attack that problem as far as the budget and the hours of each human in this organization is going to be able to go, right? I mean, it's human power and money are finite resources. Once we get to zero, we're done. As far as risk management, the job of the executive director is to go back to the board and ensure that we know what the mission set is. What is our actual objective this year? You know, we do a strategic plan, we go out 5 years, maybe it's 10, depending on the organization and the board's preference. And we establish those lines of effort. Where do we want to be in 10, 15 years as far as an overall organization, as far as a air quality solution in the Yakima Valley, and how do we get after those problem sets? And what are our near-term, intermediate, and long-term goals, and what resources are we going to allocate when to be able to get after those horizons, right? Well, the job of the executive director is come back to the board and say, hey, look, we're going to blow it on line of effort number two, and this is why we're going to blow it. However, we may be able to assume some risk by moving resources from line of effort three back to line of effort two to get after that midterm goal, but I'm going to need your approval to do that because I'm going to be reallocating funds from X to Z. You know, it's that kind of negotiation that the executive director owes to the board as well as to the county and the other governments in the area. excuse me.
Sorry.
As far as talent management, you know, as was mentioned during the discussion earlier, you know, the good doctor is the only one that he knows of as far as the compliance team that has greater than a baccalaureate degree. Well, you know, going out there and grabbing personnel, compliance engineers, and other members that can come in here and add to that overall knowledge base and efficacy of the organization and finding ways, creative ways, to get them into the Yakima. You know, I love Yakima. I've been everywhere over this globe. I've been to more countries than most people have states. And at the end of the day, you ain't got better weather, you don't got better fishing, you don't got better hunting. The trees and mountains are right at my doorstep. I don't live in the middle of them like some people on the west side. I love this place. I don't understand why anybody would ever leave it, but that's fine, that's their business. So I'm gonna try, I am a horrible homer when it comes to Yakima. All my soldiers tell me that too. I'm in charge of an organization on the west side in Tumwater, and they don't understand why I love Yakima, because all they know is what they call Yakistan, the training center. They don't know anything else. But I tell them all the time, you know, spend 5 minutes here, it's gonna grow on you. Might be like a fungus, but it'll grow. So, but at the end of the day, the last piece of that is the salesmanship, and that's where that comes into play. Is I have to not only sell the organization to the other governments and get buy-in from also the business community. You know, compliance is a nasty word for business, especially for agribusiness. At the end of the day, you come into an agribusiness community and say, hey, I'm going to make you compliant to the environment. The first thing they think is you're going to put them out of business. We don't want to be that. We don't want to be some naggy agency. We want to be value added. We want to be a part of the team. We just want to make sure that we're not depreciating the overall environment for generations to come, and we're still able to enjoy the great outdoors that is the wonderful natural bounty of the Yakima Valley. So that's where I see it, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Thornsberg.
Well, a lot of good items have already been listed, and I won't cover all those. But there are a couple I think that I would add to that mix. A little discussion has already occurred about balancing, and I think anytime you're in an administrator's position, the job always surrounds balancing. Think of the old Ed Sullivan show and the guy with all the plates spinning on the sticks. Whether you're talking about trying to balance the mission of the organization with the resources available, whether you're trying to balance business interests and non-business interests or environmental interests and non-environmental interests, balancing issues internal to the organization, how to come up with workable policies. All those things are all, largely a matter of balance. So I think you can sort of distill a lot of the particulars down into that as sort of an area. I think outreach is always a key part, I think, for any administrator. And that's outreach to a variety of constituencies. That can be the environmental community, the business community, other agencies, to the public. And as a resource, I think, even for the board as well as all of those entities. I think one of the important things, at least in my prior public experience, was being able to deliver that kind of useful, actionable information to people who needed it, information that was within our purview, and being seen as sort of an honest broker with respect to what that was. People could rely on what we had to say. To borrow a phrase, you could take it to the bank. And I think that's an important aspect of an administrator's role. I think that ties in a little bit to something that I always tend to talk about, and that is trust. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't end up talking about all that much, but it's really important. I don't care what kind of relationship you have, whether you're talking about a personal relationship with someone else, you're talking about a marriage, you're talking about a relationship with the public or whatever else, there has to be an element of trust, and that's earned over time. It's not demanded. And so you have to, as I think, part of the administrator's position is to ensure that everybody is acting in ways that build that trust. Again, over time, it doesn't happen overnight. When I took the prior position I was in, there were a lot of issues related to that when I came in the door. We had people that came to the public meetings with their own personal tape recorders because they were going to tape everything, every word that was said, because what was going on down there wasn't being, the truth wasn't being told about it. We had a lot of executive sessions all the time. And the trust with the agency really had been, I won't say broken, but seriously damaged at the time that I got there. And so I immediately started going to work with that based on what I sort of just described. We eliminated, I think, for the first 3 years I was there, the only executive session we had was for my performance evaluation. I said, there's no need for the rest of these, let's eliminate them. I made sure that the organization was responsive, that we were accurate, that we took our time to do our research before we came to conclusions, and that we had a rationale for that. As my old first grade teacher would say, show your work. And within really less than a 2 year period, probably about a year and a half, we had eliminated all of those issues, and we rarely had anybody that showed up at a commission meeting because they could get all the information they wanted on the website, and they knew what I was telling them was the God's honest truth. And I can't emphasize that, apart from all the little niggling details we're talking about, personnel and policy or all the rest of it, that is such a key critical element that I think it's too often overlooked.
Well, thank you very much, all of you. That concludes our question and answer portion. I did go over a little bit because we had the interruption in the middle. We'll now move into public comment, where we'll have a chance for members of the public to comment for up to 3 minutes, giving the board feedback on their impressions of the candidates, or any suggestions on how they feel the board should act, or things that you believe that we should take into consideration. Before I open the floor, I will read the second part of the emailed comment, which was essentially a comment to the board. Therefore, I'm going to just read it without comment, because this is just the words of Mr. Tommy Lopez. I assume Mr. Now I would like to ask the board, why does the candidate have to have science background? I thought YRCAA has an engineer. My opinion is that the people of Yakima need someone to care about us. Obviously, there isn't someone already working for the people in YRCAA's office. Let's try someone new. So that is that comment. Are there other public comments at this time? If so, please make your way to the microphone. Again, identifying yourself and speak to us for up to 3 minutes.
Excuse me, if you don't mind, I'm going to step outside so that people feel
if you're
free
more comfortable
to,
doing so.
Not for my benefit, but others might feel more comfortable making a statement, so I will excuse myself.
You're welcome to stay or go wherever you feel more comfortable, other panelists. Other members of the public, does anyone wish to make a comment at this time? Does any member of the public have any comment for the board on any of the candidates at this time? Last call for public comments. Okay. I'm not hearing any or seeing any indication of public comment to the board on feedback on the candidates. Thank you. Board discussion. We've heard from three, in my opinion, very strong candidates who bring a lot to the table as potential directors of the agency. They have different qualifications and different experience. And so it's like dating or hiring. It's always, you start out hoping you'll get everything you want in every category and you'll find the person who is universally competent. But that's not any human being, not even your chairman. So we have managed to find three very strong candidates who could do a great job. Apparently, Commissioner McKinney disagrees. We'll give her a chance to dial back in. I'll let her know that we're calling back in. It does this, I think, periodically. Just
it times
us.
Out.
It's an hour timeout.
Yeah.
If nobody says anything on the other end,
yeah.
Technology gremlins.
Yes.
Don't worry, we're not unique.
We're sorry, your call did not go through.
The DoD's been transitioning to the cloud.
Yeah.
Struggle is real.
We're sorry. Your call did not go through. Would you please try your call again?
I will. Let it. Give it a minute so I realize we hung up.
Long-winded. And then all of a sudden, this gust of wind came up and took like the rest of her speech.
Oh my goodness.
She was like, why was this end there? And the whole crowd was like, thank you, God.
Thank you, thank you.
I got the carries on.
Did you?
Yeah, meth one at that time. Somebody had lined up so it didn't get hit. Didn't keep it.
Just one in the picture.
I had actually got this. I had this before she got it.
Yeah.
It's on the website.
Yeah.
We're sorry. Your call did not go through.
Well,
please try your call again.
Really?
I think it's broke.
Okay.
Can we just try her on herself?
No, this is a bridge. And this is a bridge.
Yeah.
We can.
Yeah, she's the only one, though,
yes.
So if she just called in on it.
So, oh, can you
try one more time?
And then we'll call her son.
Is it required to be recorded in the class?
It will be on
this. On the other.
The number you have dialed has not been recognized.
Okay, we'll call her cell
phone. Yeah, if you call her on her cell and just have her dial.
So hang up and okay. And then let me know when you're ready for the number.
Ready.
509.
Let's do 9 first, right?
Yeah. 9-1.
509.
424.
424.
0043.
The number you have dialed has not been recognized.
Okay, just hang that up. I will call on my cell phone.
I think it's broke.
Hey Amanda, it's John. For some reason we can't dial out on the speakerphone anymore, so you're on my cell phone. But I have you on. I have you on speaker, and so we were just moving into board discussion. There was no public comment. I'm not sure where you got cut off there.
It was right at that time, and I thank you. We just so you know, we hit 2 hours and 50 minutes, and it shut off. So there must be a magic number.
There must be. It doesn't like us to use that any longer than that. Board, we've heard from three very strong candidates. At this point, are ready to discuss moving on to identifying a preferred candidate for additional background check prior to making an offer, if we feel that we have a candidate that we are wanting to move in that direction with. Presumably, we could do the background check on more than one candidate. So I would open it up for board discussion at this time for your feedback and impressions and your preferences on how to move forward. Does anyone have a candidate or candidates that they are feeling emerged as a best alternative or narrow down to a top two? You feeling that you are comfortable, or do you wish to continue the search?
I would say that my preference would be at this point, and I know it's a lot to ask of a county staff who we've contracted with, but my preference would actually to be to do the background check on all three candidates. I'm not prepared at this point to narrow it down, but I think I would just like to have the additional time to consider the very lengthy meeting that we had today, which was beneficial. That would be my preference.
I will second that.
Okay. I know that extends our process further, but I think that we certainly can, if we can talk to the county. I don't recall our agreement if it stipulated background check on only one candidate. If that requires additional funds, I think we have them available. We just need to modify that agreement to cover that. And I think that would also allow us to act in a future meeting. How long do you think, Jackie, I'm looking in your direction for the benefit of Commissioner McKinney, how long do you think three background checks would take?
So we would do a national background search, not because there's two ways we can go. It could be very local, or it could be more national. And I would suggest the national. And that literally could be within 3 days to get the results.
Okay.
Providing there's no lengthy issues with a person or complications with a person's background.
All right. Does that background check include contact with references to verify impressions from previous employers and so on?
So yes. So there's a background check for criminal activity that would be done, and then yes, there's a reference check in terms of speaking with previous employers about the candidate's work.
Okay. Okay. Does that sound acceptable to, okay. Commissioner, you that acceptable to you?
Yes, that sounds very acceptable, thank you.
My suggestion was that though Jackie obligingly said they would try to do that within 3 or 4 days, we have a board meeting scheduled for a week from Thursday, a regular monthly board meeting, at which point we could hear the results of the background check and be prepared with this as an agenda item to authorize making, proceeding to next steps, potentially making an offer to a candidate.
And the candidates will receive and would have to sign off on an authorization form, because we don't just run a background check. We need your consent in which to do so.
Okay. I think that could be beneficial because we might also have our other two board members at our regular monthly meeting. I know one of them had intended to be here, and his paid work told him that he was now scheduled to do something else today, which is difficult for those who are in a public sector position where they're primarily acting as a volunteer or a part-time basis. For the record, I would suggest that we make a motion to authorize a background check and reference check on all three candidates with a report back to the board at our next board meeting a week from Thursday, which is the 11th.
Mr. Chair, I would so move.
And I will
second.
Thank you. It's moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, that motion is approved. Thank you. Thank you to our candidates who have gone through, again, a public process. It is awkward to hear feedback on yourself and to take questions from the public when you don't know exactly what you're going to be asked about. Maybe things that you have to deal with others' actions. I want to also give special thanks to Commissioner McKinney for participating in a 3-hour meeting in the middle of her vacation, and for Dr. DeHaat for being available to do the interview shortly after his vacation, and to all members of the public who turned out to participate in this important process. Thanks again to our Yakima County Human Resources staff who've been working with us through most of this year. And finally, a reminder to all of you as residents of Yakima County that today is Election Day and you have 3 hours left to turn in your ballots, however you choose to vote. Please do so. If there's no other business.
If you don't mind, I do want to thank Mark as a candidate in the commute.
Yeah.
In being here.
Do I get the award for the longest drive?
Yes. Hopefully there were no overturned semis today.
No, there wasn't. A brush fire along 84 and some paving and topping it. But other than that.
I think I took a flight 14 and a half hours straight. Only one flight. The second one is 2.5 hours.
No other business. I thank everyone for being here today, for your patience through a long process. We are
quick.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone.